From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. And on today's show, we'll talk about some important legislation in Congress and what lawmakers in D.C. are and are not doing on the life issue, why Christian doctors now find themselves between a rock and a hard place, and why the Salvation Army is the latest target of a smear campaign. So this past week, we actually got some good news from Congress. They did something positive, and although we got this piece of good news, it actually points to yet a larger issue. Congress actually was able to push through bipartisan legislation through both the House and the Senate to protect animals. And yet, Congress will still not take action to protect preborn babies by voting and supporting the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act or the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which those laws protect children who will actually survive an abortion and are born alive. That bill failed to get enough votes in the Senate. It was filibustered, and Speaker Pelosi still will not allow that bill to even receive a vote in the U.S. House of Representatives. And there is also legislation still pending, the Pain Capable Act, to protect unborn children in the womb who can feel pain at 20 weeks. And I think this is important for us to be talking about because, one, Congress actually did something positive. But again, going back to that larger point, and it really raises the question, why are we so willing and why are politicians and lawmakers ready and able to provide federal protections for animals, and yet we can't get those same protections for innocent, defenseless human beings? This started last week, but both the House and the Senate have now passed the PACT Act, which stands for Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture. This legislation makes it a federal offense to knowingly crush, burn, drown, suffocate, or impale animals. And that's great news. I'm really glad and thankful that Congress passed this law preventing animal cruelty. That's a good thing. People should not be cruel to animals. They shouldn't be abused for just pure amusement or cruelty. But why is it so difficult to then extend those same protections to preborn human children? And I am a very proud dog owner. Most all of our team members at NFA own dogs. We love animals. And you see those advertisements, those commercials on TV showing animals that have been abandoned or abused, and it breaks your heart. And it should, because it's cruel and it's unjust. And so it seems inconceivable to me that this same protection can't be extended to human babies in the womb. So right now, with the passage of this law, what the United States government has done in the eyes of the law in the United States, a dog has more value than a preborn baby. Do preborn humans not deserve the same or more protection than animals? Apparently, according to our elected officials and Congress right now, the answer is no. Technically, under federal law, doctors can still leave children who survive an abortion to die from exposure after they are born alive without facing any real repercussions. They are not required to administer life-saving care like they would any other newborn baby, but it's now a federal offense to crush or impale a dog, but it's perfectly legal to crush or dismember an unborn child inside the womb, even after 20 weeks, when it is well established scientifically and medically that the child can feel pain. And if that doesn't seem right to you, you're not alone. More than 80 times, House Republicans have tried to bring the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act to the floor, which would protect preborn babies in these situations, and it has been blocked every single time by the current Democratic House leadership. And the attempt to pass that legislation in the Senate, which was sponsored and introduced and really championed by our own Senator Ben Sasse, that was unsuccessful because it was filibustered, which then required Republicans to get 60 votes. They got over 50. They had the majority, but couldn't get to 60 votes to break the filibuster. And that should cause all of us a great deal of discomfort. And, you know, recently on the show, we talked about the city of San Francisco officially blacklisting Nebraska and nearly half the country over pro-life laws protecting preborn children inside the womb. They will no longer allow official business or city travel to the state of Nebraska and other conservative states that have pro-life laws because they find it to be so disagreeable that those states have protections for unborn children. But here's a really interesting fact for you. According to the American Community Survey, there are about 120,000 to 150,000 dogs in the city of San Francisco, but only 115,000 children. There are more dogs in the city of San Francisco than there are children. And currently, under federal law, those dogs have now more protection and value than unborn human babies. And this is a sad state of affairs. And this is why creating a culture of life is so important, and championing the worth and dignity of every single human being. As a society, we need to focus and talk about valuing children and individual human lives more than pets and dogs and material possessions like houses and cars. There is no reason why the life of a child, whether that life is inside or outside of the womb, should be deemed less worthy of protection from our government than an animal. And again, we've talked about it previously on this show, that the debate is no longer about whether or not there is life in the womb. The debate is about whether or not that life deserves protection. And even abortionists like Leroy Carhart from here in Nebraska, who has performed tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of abortions, he did an on-camera interview just a few months ago and talked about how he believes that the unborn are in fact babies. And he uses that term when he talks about it, because it's a baby. And even he, as an abortionist, knows that abortion is taking the life of an unborn human baby. That he just doesn't believe that child should be protected, and that's a legal thing that should be happening. And then you have people who are running for president, like Senator Bernie Sanders, who are out there campaigning on the idea and policy proposals that people should be having fewer children or no children at all in order to save our planet in the midst of the climate panic that they're generating. And their policy solution to this is for people to stop having children. We as a society, we have cheapened and devalued human life. And what this all indicates is that our country right now is headed down a very dangerous path, because for a nation to thrive, we need human children. We need to value the dignity and worth of every single individual human being. And we need to recognize that when God creates life, He does not make mistakes. We're all for protecting animals, and we should be. But we also should be about protecting people too. And so I want to play a short clip here. Last week, popular conservative author and commentator Ali Stuckey, who is also a wife and a mother, she too had something to say about this when she actually got to testify before Congress at a congressional hearing on women's reproductive health before the House Oversight and Reform Committee. And she gave a blistering but compassionate, reasoned and fact-based testimony that's really worth hearing and sharing. So here's what Ali Stuckey told lawmakers last week.
It's surreal to be here, and not because I'm testifying before Congress, but because of the subject at hand. It is incomprehensible to me that we are having a debate over whether or not it is acceptable to kill a baby before they're born. And while we discuss Democrats' concerns about abortion restrictions today, I want to remind the committee of the true victims of radical legislation, and that is preborn babies. There was a time, perhaps, when we could claim ignorance as our justification for allowing and approving of abortion. Only a few decades ago, we knew relatively little about preborn babies in early stages of development. It seemed appropriate to some to deem abortion a privacy issue or an issue of bodily autonomy. And even then, the motto was safe, legal, and rare. Pro-abortion advocates have abandoned these three qualifications in favor of on-demand through all 9 months for any reason. Barbaric laws like those of New York, Illinois, and a bill in Virginia aim to codify what Roe and its companion cases allow, the virtually unrestricted access to abortion until the point of birth. As its defendants' position on abortion has radicalized, science and technology have advanced. We now know that a baby's heart begins to beat as early as 6 weeks. The child can feel pain as early as 20 weeks, only halfway through the pregnancy. Babies born as early as 21 weeks gestation have survived outside of the womb. By 24 weeks, still only in the second trimester, a fetus has a significant probability of surviving if born premature. Babies at this age have also received life-saving procedures to treat diseases like spina bifida. Any woman who has been pregnant or has seen her child on an ultrasound knows the undeniable humanity of their preborn babies. Even as someone who is pro-life, I was shocked to see my daughter in the womb at just 11 and a half weeks, kicking, punching, flipping around. 11 and a half weeks is still the first trimester. Embryology tells us that at the moment of conception onward, a baby is a living human being with a distinct DNA, and yet the abortion advocates have doubled down on their dehumanizing rhetoric and legislative efforts. Remarkably, many members of the so-called party of science insist upon referring to preborn children as no more than clumps of cells. And speaking of abortion, its defenders ignore the existence of the child entirely. Terms like reproductive freedom or bodily autonomy, women's empowerment, are used as euphemisms to obscure the reality that the life inside the mom's body is a human, a baby, her baby. If abortion were truly a winning issue for women, if it were, as an article in New York Magazine recently argued, a moral good, this kind of deception wouldn't be necessary. But abortion advocates know that using accurate terminology to describe abortion is an effective PR, and therefore it doesn't make for a profitable business model. Late-term abortions are typically performed, of course, by emptying the uterus of amniotic fluid, then dismembering the baby with forceps. There are other cases of more grotesque methods utilized, like with Kermit Gosnell. Witnesses before Congress have testified to the neglect of babies who survive abortions, many of whom are reportedly left to die alone. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam declared earlier this year that a baby who survives an abortion would be delivered, kept comfortable, and resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. While tragic, pro-lifers shouldn't be surprised by pro-choice radicalism. This is the end of the logic of the pro-abortion case. There is no logical argument for abortion that doesn't also apply to people who are born. America is included on a list of only 7 countries, including China and North Korea, to allow abortion after 20 weeks gestation. The same legislators who are pro-abortion were happy to vote yes on a bill criminalizing animal cruelty on the federal level. And while I'm thankful for this, I only wish the same basic compassion could be extended to the most vulnerable members of our own species. Thank you.
That's well said. And those are the exact arguments that we need to be making and the questions we need to be raising, because science, reason, compassion, and love are all on the side of life. And so too is protecting women. There is also now new federal legislation pending in the United States House of Representatives aiming to protect women from the risky but increasingly common abortion method in which a patient never actually sees a doctor face to face. The Teleabortion Prevention Act would require a very basic part of medical care, an actual physical examination by a doctor prior to administering the abortion drug. Life News reports that United States Representative Ron Wright, a Republican from Texas, recently introduced the bill to ban what's known as telemedicine or webcam abortion, stating that although there are some protections in place, pro-abortion groups are looking for ways to get around the law. There's evidence that teleabortion participants are not getting appropriate medical advice or assistance and ending up severely injured. And what we know about these webcam abortions is that they're dangerous because the woman does not receive a physical examination from the abortion doctor, and instead she simply talks to an abortionist on a computer screen before someone else dispenses the abortion drugs, which can have serious complications, which have led to major surgeries and sometimes even death. And so all this legislation seeks to do is ensure that women receive at least a basic examination from the abortionist and a follow-up visit. And while this new legislation isn't likely to go anywhere, at least for the time being, if the inaction and failure of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act is any indication, there are at least 20 states that do have protections in state law preventing these webcam abortions, of which Nebraska is one. But this year in our legislative session, there was legislation introduced to repeal and remove those protections, to authorize the practice of webcam abortions and expand access and increase abortion across the state. Nebraska Family Alliance, we testified in opposition to that bill in committee, and so far the committee has taken no action, but it is still alive and pending before our state judiciary committee, and it's still alive for the 2020 legislative session. So that's one that we will be monitoring very closely and ensuring that it does not advance in 2020. And there's a whole list of bills that we're monitoring and will be working on in next year's legislative session, which is quickly approaching. State lawmakers will reconvene and begin meeting in early January. And if you want really easy to follow, up-to-date information and summaries of the most important bills impacting family, freedom, and life, you can find all of that information at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. And there was more news on this issue this past week that's very concerning that we want to talk about. An often overlooked group who this issue affects is doctors. And the Trump administration, through the Department of Health and Human Services, had instituted a new rule granting conscience protections for medical professionals so that they are not forced to choose to perform or to refer or counsel in favor of or provide coverage for abortion or any other services that they have religious or moral objections to. And last week, a federal court in New York struck down and threw out that rule protecting healthcare professionals who decline to participate in medical procedures that violate their conscience. So while this new rule will inevitably be litigated and work its way through the legal system, Christian doctors and medical professionals could be forced to be in a situation where they are having to choose between violating their conscience and their convictions or being fined or even losing their license to practice medicine. The conscience rule, as it's known, was issued last May by the Trump administration, and it was set to take effect later this month. And it simply and rightfully ensures that religious and pro-life doctors and other healthcare professionals can continue to serve their communities without fear of facing severe punishment by the government. Essentially, it affirms and protects basic First Amendment freedoms. The freedoms that are guaranteed to us and all Americans under federal law and the First Amendment are civil rights. These are not special gifts that the government can give or withhold whenever it chooses. Healthcare entities and medical professionals who desire to protect innocent human life instead of destroying it should never be forced to choose between violating their conscience or leaving the healthcare industry. That hurts society. That hurts people who need care. Government exists to secure freedom, not threaten it. And this is exactly what the conscience rule does. It secures the religious freedom and conscience rights of healthcare workers from being forced to provide abortions and other procedures that violate their religious beliefs. And U.S. Senator Ben Sasse actually had a thing or two to say about this decision. He released a statement last week in response saying, quote, "This decision is absurd mush. The point of the First Amendment, especially the free exercise of religion, is to protect the conscience rights of Americans. In this country, government doesn't get to tell you that your faith is fine on Sunday and at church, but not Monday at work. The Trump administration ought to defend basic conscience rights all the way to the Supreme Court." And that's exactly right. It should never be the role of government to mandate that religious citizens violate their conscience and their convictions on the sanctity of life or face punishment. That's not only wrong, it's unconstitutional. And we need to be willing to stand up to advocate and protect our First Amendment freedoms and conscience rights. And we have to be willing and ready to engage government and culture on this issue because it's not going away. And even nonprofit ministries who provide much needed services to all people are now even coming under attack simply for having Christian beliefs or adhering to biblical principles. It happened again this past week with the Salvation Army, who has now become a favorite target of the progressive left as they seek to shame and punish and force out anyone who doesn't agree with them ideologically, even at the expense of the most vulnerable. Earlier this week, popular singer and celebrity Ellie Goulding warned and threatened to cancel her scheduled performance on Thanksgiving at the halftime show of the annual Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving football game unless the Salvation Army makes a, quote, solid, committed pledge or donation to the LGBTQ community. Earlier in the week, Ellie Goulding had made a post on Instagram about how excited she was to get to do this halftime performance and kick off the Salvation Army's Red Kettle campaign. Of course, with people are familiar with the Red Kettle and all the money that gets raised and donated to the Salvation Army to help serve and feed and clothe people who are homeless and living in poverty. And you would think, so far, so good. The Dallas Cowboys work every year to help promote the Salvation Army and the work that they are doing and the Red Kettle campaign to raise money for the homeless during the holiday season. But this caught the ire of the social justice warriors, and she got absolutely lambasted on social media, and a new smear campaign was underway against the Salvation Army. And of course, Ellie Goulding has now buckled under the pressure and is threatening to cancel her performance and any association or affiliation with Salvation Army. The reason? The Salvation Army is a Christian faith-based organization that has biblical beliefs on marriage and sexuality. But even so, the Salvation Army does not discriminate against anyone. They don't discriminate against anyone because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. They serve all people. They help people who are homeless and in poverty. And in partnering with the Dallas Cowboys Thanksgiving Day game, so far they have raised an incredible $2.4 billion for the homeless. They exist to help people in need. But of course, that's not enough. They want to punish the Salvation Army and try to hurt them financially, even though all they do is exist to serve the homeless. And a spokesperson for the Salvation Army responded and said, quote, "With an organization of our size and history, myths can perpetuate. An individual's sexual or gender identity, religion, or lifestyle has no bearing on our willingness to provide service. We stand firmly behind our mission to meet human needs in His name without discrimination." And Ellie Goulding's response to this has simply been to try to back Salvation Army into a corner and force them to make a donation to the LGBTQ community, or else she's going to cancel her halftime performance. In a press release, our fellow Family Policy Council in Texas, Texas Values, pointed out that this is a continuation of the smear that the San Antonio City Council leveled against Chick-fil-A earlier this year when the City Council targeted the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and other Christian charitable organizations. And they released a statement saying, quote, "This is exactly why Texas passed the Save Chick-fil-A Religious Freedom Law that protects charitable donations. The Dallas Cowboys should put charity above politics and allow this performer to walk before caving to this extortion request." And hopefully that will be the case, that as we approach the holiday season and are getting ready to celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas, that even if just for a moment, we can set aside politics, or at least put charity ahead of political differences. Because in a diverse and pluralistic society like ours, no one should be forced to retreat from civil or political life as the price for following their faith. And that's why we're committed to defending the religious freedom rights of all citizens here in our state. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.